You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It is Monday, February 5th, 2018. Thanks for joining me this morning. In-depth look at tomorrow's headlines today. Never before, or always living up to that mantra, and I would say never before has it that been so true as much as it is today. Well, congratulations, first of all, to the Philadelphia Eagles for winning the Super Bowl yesterday. It was a good game, so I hear. That was the Philadelphia Eagles win. Very interesting. The only point, the only mention I want to make on that is, isn't it interesting to see the coach actually thanking, saying, you know, all glory goes to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Isn't that interesting? How quickly have things changed in the geopolitical landscape? I guess that's really not geopolitical, but that's the landscape has changed over the last 12 months. I don't know what to say about it, except it's good to hear. Are they trying to rehabilitate their image? I don't know what's in a man's heart. He sounded genuine, looked genuine. I watched the replays. And of course, this against the backdrop of everyone that's, you know, taking a knee during the anthem and such, all of that. But that aside, I mean, that's just interesting. I just thought it was interesting. And we're seeing more and more people now acknowledging their beliefs, their Christian beliefs, which did not happen under Obama. So that's noteworthy. Okay, in today's program, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to lay out the memo, the Nunes executive summary of the FISA warrants, the abuse of the FISA court, briefly. The Cliff Notes version, because I spent the entire weekend working, and I mean this, I was in the office throughout the weekend reading all sorts of information, speaking with one source in Washington, D.C. I've told you about before. He's with the FBI. He had some things to say about it. I spoke with him a couple of times. I spoke with some others a couple of times this weekend. I listened to everything. I think everything there was to listen to about the actual executive summary by Nunes, the Nunes memo, I guess, memo gate. I don't know. But and I said Friday that I was going to do a special show this weekend. I decided Saturday in the afternoon not to do that. I called my wife. I said, you know, I'm just not feeling good. I want to just get everything I can find out about what's taking place, because there are things that we're missing, I believe, and that we need to really. Anyone can do a show. Anyone can fill the airwaves. Anyone can really talk for an hour about this and say the same things everyone else is saying. What I want to do is take it a step further in a level deeper, or levels much deeper. And that's exactly what I want to do with this show. So I decided not to open my mouth. I wanted to just get as much information as I could. And I'm glad I did, because I've got some new information here about the Nunes memo. I think this one piece of information is extremely important that relates to the exceptional work done by Cheryl Atkinson, of course, the reporter, with respect to a possible or potential violation of a procedural violation, which in fact is a civil rights violation of Title I surveillance authority. I'll get into that momentarily. But in the audio clips I have, very short in terms of, I've got two, I believe, right? Yeah, okay, two. Very, very short, very to the point. Because, I mean, distilling really hours of analysis of this, of every talking head out there. sometimes, my head, it's almost like my head's going to explode from all of this. So we're going to get into it right away. By the way, I want to thank Alex Jones for last Friday for allowing me for appearing in the third hour and then allowing me to host the last hour of his show. If everything goes to plan, I guess I'm invited back today to do the same thing, to host the last hour of his show. That's, however, we missed contacts this weekend. So, but as far as I know, I'll be hosting the last hour of the Alex Jones InfoWars show today. Again, as far as I know, unless something has changed since that time. So, but great operation, great people there. You know, it's, look, we all have to work together. We must all work together right now because we are save. I believe that we have to save our nation from these criminal elements, this deep state, permanent state, criminal cabal that has infested our government. So we need to work together, and we need to put aside, and I'm speaking to everyone now, but no one in particular. All right. Everyone needs to put aside, I believe, petty differences, minor doctrinal differences, if you are talking about issues of faith. But when I say minor, I'm talking about non-salvation impacting differences. All right. Put them aside and let's all show up. Let's all gather together and show up, because here's the thing. I could be doom and gloom all day long. And there's a lot to be gloomy and doomy about. There's so much, isn't there? Especially when you start taking apart what happened under Barack Hussein, the lawless man, Barry Satoru, Obama, whatever his name is, and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton crime family, in my view, as well as Lynch, Comey, and everyone else. But if we, the American people, or everyone in the West, I don't care if you're listening to this in the UK or Australia or wherever you might be, and I've got listeners everywhere. Thank you so much for listening, and I mean that from the heart, and thanks for your notes of encouragement, your emails. I read them all. Thank you. It doesn't matter. We can win on the numbers alone if we stand up and say, look, we are not going to put up with this anymore, and that's what we have to do, and we have to make sure, in my view, that if this goes beyond talk, we can expose, but we do expose, and it's necessary to expose, but we also have to act and make sure that the people we have elected, put in office, or those people who have appointed others to act on our behalf, are acting. And that's where we're at today. It's action that is required. Now, the other part of this, of course, my part as well, is to expose, because it's through exposure, it's through knowledge, it's through information that we empower the population. Because without that knowledge, the action wouldn't be action without knowledge. So everyone plays an important part. And if you're listening to this and if you're wondering what the meaning of your life is, look, I've been there. You're born for this time. This is your time. Just understand that. And we have to, I had a friend one time say that, you know, we have to read our own email. In other words, we have to follow the instructions through conscious prayer, understanding of what our job is and why we're here, meaning in the larger sense. And I think that's so true. To wax philosophical momentarily here. That's so true. We're all here. We are all living today because we have a job to do. And I don't think God's going to let us leave this earth without doing our job that we were appointed to do. And that's just my view. So, you know, we're not going to get away that easy. All right. So, anyway. All right, in terms of in terms of the audio clips I've got two very short clips, very distilled, very concise, very laser-like. So, getting on with the what we know, kind of the Cliff Notes version of what we know, because I'm sure everyone's probably pretty much up to speed on the revelations from the Nunes memo. The memo itself shows that the FISA court was misled by James Comey, by Andrew McCabe, by Sally Yates, by Rod Rosenstein, and Dana Bowente. All right? Now, if you cobble together all of the testimony from just Comey, use him as an example, you will find that he lied. There's no other way around it. I've listened to all of the testimony. That's my personal assessment, that he lied to Congress, in my personal and professional opinion, and he caused or did lie, misrepresented, whatever you want to say, misstated the FISA warrant application on Carter Page. It all goes back to Carter Page. All right. So, in my assessment, this all comes down to really one thing. The memo itself shows the FISA court was misled, or I don't believe it could have been complicit, but misled, lied to by James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Rod Rosenstein, and Dana Bowente. Why did I name these five individuals? Very simple. The initial warrant for surveillance was done, and this is typical. You have the in FISA warrants, you've got the top tier of the FBI along with the top tier of the Attorney General signing off on a FISA warrant to a FISA court judge. And in that warrant, you lay out the facts. They omitted exculpatory evidence or omitted material facts. Specifically, what did they omit? They omitted that the information that was contained in the FISA warrant application was actually a product of Hillary Clinton, a product of the Clinton campaign, a product of the DNC, was paid for by kind of through some hoops there, but ultimately by the Clinton campaign. That's what we're talking about, all right? Now, to give you an example of FISA, I found this figure in. You can write this figure down. Note this figure. The numbers are a little bit difficult to come by. All right, when you're looking at FISA court, everything is done in secrecy. However, it was reported in 2013 that in over 33 years of its existence, now again, you have to go back to the establishment of FISC, of the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. The FISA court granted 33,000, or yes, I'm sorry, they granted 33,942 warrants in 33 years. Again, 33,942 warrants were granted by the FISA court. How many were denied? You've heard this number, I'm sure. 12 in 33 years. That is a rejection rate of 0.03%, 0.3%. So what we're seeing here is an abuse of process that's evident, that has been disclosed from the FISA or from the Nunes memo. Now, this raises some questions as well. Will this lead to the firing of Rod Rosenstein? Rosenstein, whatever. Will this lead to his firing? And if it does, how will that affect the Mueller investigation of Donald Trump? Excuse me. Well, look, when you look at the facts here, I don't see any other way around the fact that Rosenstein must be sanctioned, and the only way to sanction him would be through firing, because of his misrepresentation of material facts in a FISA warrant. That's pretty serious. And So understand that Rosenstein is in charge of the Mueller investigation. Mueller's got to go to Rosenstein to get budgetary allowances and to hire others. And so that would imperil the Mueller investigation. In many, and I've watched this ad nauseum on the various news programs, that this would create this Saturday night massacre kind of environment. This goes back to the Nixon days. And create this constitutional crisis. Many people are talking about this. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, I'm shotgunning a whole bunch of information here because this just needs to be done. Now, have you noticed the silence by Clinton, Hillary Clinton? Man, has she been silent. As has Obama, very silent. Lynch, silent. Everyone is silent. The only one that's really out there communicating with Twitter or whatever, James Comey. And by the way, he's about, I really believe that he's about to get smacked down, Comey is, with some lawsuits. And the other part of this as well, the lawsuits would extend, I can see them developing, Carter Page, Manafort, and others, indirectly because of this. Even though they're not, for example, Manafort's not directly involved or has no direct implications. This is akin to well, remember what happened. I think it was with the Los Angeles Police Department. This is years ago now. Their lab work was called into question, and that resulted in a whole bunch of backlash cases over the years being relitigated. Or looked at or tossed out or dismissed. I mean, it was just a mess. This is a mess, to be sure. Now, so we're looking at that. We're also looking at this, a very important aspect, too. Before I go any further, I want to mention this. Phase two, which is discussed, has been discussed on the in various news programs. Phase one was, of course, the Nunes memo about the Department of Justice and FISA, or Department of Justice and FBI issues, lies, abuses. There's, of course, along with that, the Office of Inspector General's report has not come in yet. The 1.2 million documents that have been submitted to the House. House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. There's that coming. But phase two is coming as well. That very same committee will be looking at the abuses that took place concurrent with the Department of Justice and FBI at the same time with the State Department under Obama, and specifically under Clinton, as well as Kerry. This is going to be a huge deal. In fact, I would suggest this will be as big, if not even bigger, of an implication of political assassination attempts by the Department of State working against American interests and working against, certainly most assuredly, Donald Trump by members of the State Department. This is going to be big. This is phase two, and that's coming. And you can see the Democrats already, or the progressives more importantly, or more accurately, trying to just hold this whole thing together. They don't want any of this to see the light of day. So there's a lot of white noise out there that's being made by the progressives. And since I'm shotgunning information, all right, one other thing I was took notes on here and I was looking at. There was a question that was raised recently. Well, this weekend, can Mueller indict Donald Trump? And this question kind of came. It seemed to evolve from a number of things, but this from progressives, the leftists, of course, saying that, well, Donald Trump is engaged in obstruction, colluding with Nunes to release this memo, and of course, that represents obstruction of an ongoing investigation. So could Mueller? You see the logic there? Okay, so could Mueller indict Donald Trump? And the answer to that, I was kind of surprised about this, because many people call Mueller a special prosecutor erroneously. All of this is erroneous. All right, when you look at the history of the Office of the Independent Counsel, which is the current act, it's not a special prosecutor, it's not a special counsel, it's an independent counsel under that statute. The question that was raised that I've seen, and you're going to be hearing about this more and more this week. Trust me when I tell you this, you're going to be hearing more and more about this. Can Robert Mueller indict Donald Trump? Well, first, under what basis? The first, of course, would be for firing Comey. The second would be the obstruction issue, obstruction of justice, with respect to the Nunes memo. Actually, both would fall under obstruction of justice. So that's the question. Let's look back in history. There are two occasions where there were court opinions or legal opinions, scholarly or court legal opinions on this. One was 1973. Can a sitting president be indicted? And this, of course, arose from the Nixon U.S. Department of Justice. Nixon's own Department of Justice determined that a sitting president could not be indicted because you could not have a court of 12, we'll say, laying out or affecting the future, the actual leadership of our country, of our representative republic. All right, so that was in 1973. No, the answer is no. And then in 2000, now remember, this is under Clinton. Clinton's Department of Justice said no. The opinion by the Clinton Department of Justice said no. You can't indict a sitting president. Now, you can impeach, which is different than indicting. But any kind of criminal indictment would have to come after the president is out of office. That's the current basis right now. If you want facts, so you go back to 1973, and then you go back to the year 2000. 1973, the Nixon Justice Department, and the year 2000, the Clinton Justice Department, and legal opinions related to both. Okay, so there you have it. Very interesting piece of information. Now, Mueller could name, I'll mention this, Mueller has the potential to name Donald Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. I found that very interesting. Wow, what a stigma that would create, wouldn't it? But again, that has no teeth, that would have really no teeth in terms of removing him from office. It would be more of the optics, the public perception, which it could very well play out that way. Now, I'm just giving you the facts based on well-researched information. I'm not saying anything. I'm just laying this out. Okay, so there's that. And I think that, I don't think this country would stand for any of that. But we do have the response by President Donald Trump when he asked directly if he would fire Rosenstein based on the information in the memo, kind of a convoluted question shouted out by a member of the media, and he responded again, I believe it was to that specific question in listening to the various, I mean, well, numerous sound clips. Well, you figure that one out. All right, that was his response to the question about whether Rosenstein would be fired, and Donald Trump has within his authority as the president to instruct the head of the attorney general to fire the attorney general, or to instruct the attorney general to fire the deputy attorney general based on the memo. Now, I didn't say that as articulate as I should have, but that's the gist of it. You get it. And, of course, you got to go back to 1973 to think back what happened during the Saturday Night Massacre. I'm not going to relive that under Richard Nixon. But there's no comparison here because with what Nixon did to what Donald Trump could do, because the situations are completely different. So that's just keep that in the back of your mind. All right. Now, Let's dispense with a couple with these two audio clips I have. Again, they're very short, but listen. This is the cream, I believe. These two audio segments are the cream of all of the programs this past weekend, including the ones on Friday. And I could play, I could play Sean Hannity for 15 minutes, and he would be right on the money. But when it's all distilled down, let's go right to the essence, right to the cream of the issue here, right to the top. So, the first audio clip is let me get my notes here to make sure. I've gone through so many audios. It's crazy. I have saved so many segments of audio. All right. The first one is from former FBI Assistant Director Chris Swecker, who appeared on Neil Cavuto. It's 38 seconds in length. Listen to what he's got to say about the contents of the Nunes memo. Go ahead and play clip one.
Something went terribly wrong on the seventh floor at the FBI under former Director Jim Comey and in his inner circle. This is shoddy work. This is a type of thing that you learn at the FBI Academy, source handling 101, source vetting 101. You don't mislead a court. You present all the facts to a court when you're using intrusive methods like wiretaps, FISA, any type of electronic interception. So, but please, the American public should realize this is not the FBI. This is a very small group of individuals. Their names are on these FISA applications. This is a leadership breakdown under Jim Comey.
Okay, that was plain and simple, easy to understand. This limits, now this of course is from a former assistant FBI director, saying, okay, it's limited to the seventh floor. In other words, Comey and the people around Comey, they were directly responsible for these abuses. We knew that, but let's get that out of the way. It's not the rank and file. We've heard this over and over again. Obviously, that's not the case. You've got the people around Comey, including but not limited to Strzok and Page, and as well as the their compatriots in the Department of Justice. Kind of a no-brainer, right? 38 seconds, no worries. Now, let's go to one more. In the last clip I will play, the audio segment I'll have played, is a little bit more detailed. This comes from two individuals. And the reason I consider this extremely important, now, this is from Congressman John Ratcliffe and James Kallstrom. Kallstrom, of course, former FBI, and Ratcliffe is one of three individuals who actually went through the entire FISA warrants, all of the warrants, all of the applications for the warrants, all of the underlying documentation that caused the Nunes memo to be created. So we listened to him because he's seen it with his own eyes. So it's important to understand where he's coming from. So I've taken a very lengthy interview with Ratcliffe and Kallstrom and distilled it down into, I don't know, just a few minutes, but it's worth listening to. And I cut it abruptly, or have it cut abruptly, because again, your time's important, so is ours. So go ahead and roll clip two. This is Ratcliffe, Congressman Ratcliffe, and James Kallstrom on Mornings with Marie, I believe it is, or whatever that show is on Fox News. Go ahead and play clip two.
The most important thing, not just from the memo, but from the underlying documents that I have seen, is that full disclosures weren't made to the FISA court. And why that's so important, Maria, the FISA court, unlike any other court in America, including the Supreme Court, doesn't hear both sides. This is a court where the government comes forward. And in this case, if they ask for surveillance on an American citizen, it's up to the government to make full disclosure. And in this case, in asking for a warrant against someone associated with the Trump campaign, disclosure was not made that dossier that was the basis of it was paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign and prepared by someone who had an expressed desire to keep Donald Trump from becoming president, or that the FBI director himself called it unverified. Those are disclosures that had to be made that weren't made.
So there were a handful of FBI leaders here. They go to the and the Department of Justice leadership. They go to the FISA court to get a warrant to spy on somebody, and they don't tell the judge that, in fact, what they have as evidence, which is this dossier, which was largely based on getting that warrant. They don't tell the judge that that dossier was paid for by the opponent. By Hillary Clinton?
That's right. And not just once, not just twice, not just three times, but there were four different occasions for there to be full disclosure. And again, Maria, there isn't someone in there to fill in the blanks, to give the other side of the argument to a FISA judge. So when we give law enforcement these really powerful tools for law enforcement and counterintelligence purposes, we trust that the government will use them fairly and fully disclose before they take this type of action. And that's one of the things that I was most disappointed in as I reviewed the underlying source documents to all four FISA applications.
Jim Kallstrom, we know that the leadership of the FBI did not like Donald Trump during the election, leading up to the election. Peter Strzok and his girlfriend, Lisa Page, back and forth with text messages saying, he's this, he's that, we need an insurance policy, should he win, let's get to the secret society. I mean, crazy texts. Like, they actually wanted to abuse their power and dictate an ending that they didn't, because they saw a different ending happening.
Crazy on that, but before I get to that point, John's 100% correct. But in addition to that, the information was bogus. Sure, they didn't tell the judge, but they also didn't tell the judge that the information was made up. It was phony. You know, this is a serious, serious matter. Criminal contempt, false statements, conspiracy to lie to the court, denying civil rights under the color of law, perjury. I mean, these are serious, serious things. During my career, I was involved in one way or another with literally hundreds of these types of orders. And the way it was looked at was meticulous. The chain of command, the number of people that you'd have to sit down and do a mortarboard with to convince that you actually had a legitimate case to go to the judge. And I think these people, these sycophants that were around Comey and in the Department of Justice and elsewhere, was so cocksure that Hillary Clinton had a 99.9% chance of winning, they just threw caution to the wind and they did all this crazy stuff. And I don't think we've seen what 1 or 2% of what we're about to see. We haven't talked about the unmaskings, the activity of Obama's National Security Council and Uranium One and all this host of other things.
Well, uranium,
I mean, this is bad stuff.
Yeah, you bring up Uranium One, and it's an important thing to bring up because the Hillary Clinton investigation seems to have been in even before they interviewed her. The fix was in, Congressman, and I know you've spoken about this before because you actually interviewed Jim Comey at that testimony last September 2016, when you were looking at all of the behavior of the FBI and coming up with this conclusion that there should be no charges. Let me show this quick clip of you talking to Jim Comey last September.
Did you make the decision not to recommend criminal charges relating to classified information before or after Hillary Clinton was interviewed by the FBI on July the 2nd?
After.
Congressman, he said after, he lied to you.
Pretty plain and simple. At the end, he lied to you, meaning Comey. And of course, starting at the beginning, that was Congressman John Ratcliffe, who reviewed all of the underlying documentation that resulted in the Nunes memo. And then, of course, James Kallstrom, who has the experience in getting wiretaps and experience with the courts. Okay, so there you have it. And I think it's important. Everything that they said, extremely important, of course, with respect to what the abuses have been. The American people have been hoodwinked. We've been, and we still are to a large degree, because the perpetrators of this are still unpunished. I understand that. I understand the frustration. We have to keep the heat on to bring the perpetrators to answer for their, to be accountable for what they've done, and also to run this all the way to the top, because at the top, Who's paying for all of this? Hillary Clinton. And, of course, who are the co-conspirators in this, in my personal opinion? Hillary Clinton paying for it, her campaign, that's beyond that is beyond any supposition. That's fact. It's been proven through Fusion GPS and Perkins Coie. It all falls at Hillary Clinton. But also, we also have to remember, this is an Obama scandal, an Obama crime, because it is through the presidential daily briefings, at the bare minimum through the PDBs, that Obama knew exactly what was going on. So understand that. There's no plausible deniability for Barack Hussein Obama. None. Zero. He had to know exactly what was going on. So and notice how silent, again, I have to bring this up, silence from Obama, silence from Clinton. The silence should tell a lot, tell us a lot. Now, there's and again, we're waiting for phase two, which is going to hit like a brick, another thud on this nation and further rock this country. Because not only do we have abuses within the FBI, within the Department of Justice, but those abuses in terms of political capital were extended into the Department of State under Clinton, under Kerry, but more appropriately under Obama. And the abuses there, equally disturbing, where you have the law enforcement arm and the very sharp intelligence tools working against the American people, or the will of the American people and the good of the nation. Now you've got the political side of it on the Department of State. We must not forget about that. But all right, let me move into the real important aspect of this, and not talked about except for just one or two outlets in the non-mainstream, non-Mockingbird media. Now, this is critical to understand. This goes to the work by Cheryl Atkinson. Did the FBI violate Woods' procedures? Now, I'm going to explain all of this. The article appeared, I think it was yesterday, maybe, at the Conservative Treehouse, Cheryl Atkinson. But the biggest of all bigger aspects of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence on that memo in all coverage has been overlooked by everybody, virtually. The Department of Justice, FBI, FISA request was for Title I surveillance authority. This is where you might want to get a pen and piece of paper and just take note of this. All right. This is not just merely some innocuous request for metadata exploration or just some kind of a shotgun approach to surveillance. No. The FBI, through Title I, and I'll explain what this means here momentarily, the FBI said that Carter Page, as an American citizen, he was suspected of being a foreign agent of a hostile foreign government on United States soil. In other words, the FBI was equating Carter Page with Robert Hansen, if you remember that story. Because Title I's FISA surveillance of U.S. citizens is the sharpest tool in the toolbox of the FBI and Department of Justice. It is more intrusive. It is far more, it's far deeper, more exhaustive. It's a far-reaching type of search, seizure, and surveillance authority. It allows the FBI to look at every part of one's life under Title I, and that was, of course, Carter Page. All communication, all travel, all contact can be opened and reviewed without, plain and simple. And by the way, keep in mind, as I'm talking about this, the procedure of unmasking that was allowed by Obama. Absolutely important, absolutely critical that part is kept in mind when I talk about this, because you've got the Department of Justice and the FBI, and you've got the FISA abuses. We'll call that well, as it's being called, phase one. And phase two, of course, is from the Department of State. That's phase two. Now, let's go back to phase one. You've got subsets of this, different parts of the phase one, shall we say. We saw the opening salvo through the Nunes memo. There's more to come. But within the structure of the Nunes memo and the underlying documentation exists some extremely serious and heretofore not discussed pieces of information. And I apologize to everyone. I know I'm repeating myself, but it's important that we're all on the same page, no pun intended, excuse me, as we talk about this. When we look at the House Intelligence Committee memo, it is absolutely clear that the Department of Justice and the FBI, they participated in a fraud on the Foreign Intelligence Services Court. We know that. In order to conduct surveillance of Carter Page, a U.S. citizen. The FBI and the Department of Justice, specifically the names I mentioned, you got James Comey, Rosenstein, Sally Yates, my goodness, who else did I mention? The five people I mentioned, you can go back and listen to it. They all intentionally used unverified opposition research paid for by one political party, the DNC, and one candidate, Hillary Clinton, designed to harm the opposing party by creating this fictional Russian collusion story as a reliable fact. All of this took place in the midst of a United States presidential election. We can all agree on this. I really think that we can all say, yeah, this is true. Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe testified before the committee that but for the reliance on that salacious and unverified 35-page dossier, which was written allegedly by Christopher Steele, I don't think he wrote it alone. I think he had help, and I think that others, this is my personal opinion, include Nellie Orr, the wife of Bruce Orr, number four, justice, main justice, as well as some others, but that's beside the point. Except for that dossier, the FISA warrant would never have been sought nor obtained. This is not in dispute. This is the testimony of FBI Director Andrew McCabe. Now, remember their initial request was rejected by the FISA court. The FISA judges relied on two sources as a basis for the eventual issuance of the warrant. The dossier, authored by a foreign agent, that being Christopher Steele, we believe at this point. And this, what was the second item? It was a Yahoo News report that Steele gave to Yahoo News. In other words, you're going to hear this term circular intelligence, circular reporting, circular substantiation. And it's just, it's some call it poor tradecraft. I call it deliberate and intentional misdirection. All right. This is nothing more or nothing less, I should say, than a massive abuse of power. And I don't care if you are a flaming liberal or the most rigid conservative, you should be outraged because a surveillance warrant was issued against an American citizen based on an unverified, uncorroborated piece of garbage document. The claims made by a foreign agent who was desperate to prevent the current president from winning the election. And it was paid for, and this guy, Steele, got paid not just by the Fusion GPS and Perkins Coie, via Perkins Coie, but, or the Clinton campaign, ultimately, but was also paid by the FBI. Think about that for a second. The FBI paid this guy as well as the Clinton campaign, ultimately, through a series of middle people, middle entities. So, but what of this surveillance? What of this type of surveillance? Let's take a look at what Cheryl Atkinson has to say, because this is extremely important. As I mentioned, you've got FISA 702, and then a more, think of FISA 702 warrants as kind of like a shotgun approach. Let me retract that. FISA 702 surveillance warrants would be less intrusive than Title One. We don't need an analogy. They're just less intrusive. Title One FISA surveillance of U.S. citizens is actually saying, okay, this guy's a spy. He's on U.S. soil. He's working for the opposition. In other words, the Russians or whatever. And we need to just unleash the dogs of hell on this guy. Absolutely. So all communication, travel, contact can be opened and reviewed. And I'm not just talking about his emails or conversations to and from. Anyone who mentions his name in an email, they're under surveillance. I mean, this whole thing just goes, it goes everywhere. This is the most critical of all surveillances. All right. So all aspects of any of Mr. Page's engagements are subject to being secretly monitored. Now, this is a completely different level of surveillance authority. This is the highest possible surveillance authority. And as detailed by Cheryl Atkinson and posted on the Conservative Treehouse by Sundance, it has nothing to do with FISA 702 search queries, Title 7, FISA 702 search queries of U.S. persons. Now, a metaphor is presented in what Sundance had written in this article, which I'll put the link in the program description. But under Title 1 FISA authority, Carter Page was essentially patient zero in an Ebola pandemic. I guess that's a pretty good metaphor. Labeling him as a foreign agent allowed the FBI to look at every single person he came in contact with and every single aspect of their lives and their activities in growing and concentric circles without limitation, without limits to current time or historic review. I mean, this is like a colonoscopy with a fire hose, okay? There's a mental picture for you. The Title I designation as a foreign agent applied retroactively to any action taken by Page. And this auto-generates an exponential list of other people he came in contact with. So, again, think of that metaphor of Ebola, patient zero. Think of that. And each of those people, groups, organizations, could now have their communications under surveillance, unmasked, and analyzed by the Department of Justice and FBI. With the same surveillance authority as they were conducting with Carter or with Carter Page. So imagine you, and this happens, and this happened in this case. Imagine you're a reporter trying to get a story or trying to verify something about Page, and you have contact with Carter Page as a reporter. Bam, you are now under surveillance legally. And everything you do or say, it can be spotted. You can be spied upon by the Department of Justice and FBI. It was on October 21st, 2016, when the DOJ and FBI sought and received a FISA probable cause order, not, I emphasize this, not under Title VII, authorizing electronic surveillance on Carter Page from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And again, when you in this, just go to the link. This is in the applicable section is highlighted here. The application had to be first certified by the director or deputy director of the FBI. This is how serious this is, and it then required the approval of the attorney general, deputy attorney general, or the Senate confirmed assistant AG for the National Security Division. Gee, Batman himself. But I digress. Now, the FBI and DOJ obtained one initial FISA warrant targeting Page and three FISA renewals. Now, about FISA renewals, and this is important to remember, okay? As required by statute, and I'm not going to give you the statute, but you can find it. It's 50 U.S.C. 1805, Section D, Subsection 1, Paragraph 1. A FISA order on an American citizen must be renewed by the FISA court every 90 days. Now, here's the money statement. and each renewal requires a separate finding of probable cause. Oh, how important that is. In other words, and I've done surveillance. I did surveillance for 30 years. As an operational asset, I was involved in the wiretapping. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to get into my stuff. But so I've seen this take place. Surveillance is kind of one of those things that when you conduct surveillance, the findings build upon themselves. All right. Absent of that, in other words, if you are conducting surveillance, I'm just going to say normal physical surveillance on someone. And I've done so many hours. I wrote a book. In fact, it's out of print, but that was used as back in the day. Before everything changed, that was used as a basis for training in some law enforcement academies. Yay me, right? When you conduct surveillance, you create a picture or create a dossier, I guess, of someone's actions. And the surveillance from day one to day two builds, the facts build upon themselves. The important sentence here, the important part of this is, in order to be renewed, there must be some nugget there that is found by surveillance, by the wiretapping, that says, whoa, we've got to extend this. It's not an extension because we didn't find anything. It's an extension because, hey, we found something and we need to get more. And this is where, in this case, this is where the contention exists. And this is where the abuse exists. Understand, the initial request, October 21st, 2016, which was the second of two, the first one declined, which again goes back to that number in 33 years. I can't remember if I said this or not. What's wrong with me? Mad cow, right? As reported in 2013, through the existence of FISA court, in over 33 years, FISA granted 33,942 warrants. During that time, there were only 12 denials. That represents a 0.03% rejection factor. That's 0.3%, right? That would be 0.3 or 0.0001%. It's a small number. It's an amazingly small number. So with every request subsequent to the initial October 20th, when I got sidetracked there, was to say that the request for surveillance of Carter Page was turned down in the summer of 2016 by the FISA court, representing part of that 0.03% number, which would just extend into 2017, all right, because I can't see much changing in terms of the FISA court numbers, although that stopped at 2013. So a very minuscule number of FISA requests are ever rejected. Using the 2013 figures, you're looking at 0.03%. So you got to figure, very unusual for the FISA court to say, no, we're not going to put Carter Page under surveillance. This is midsummer. Then you go to October 21st, 2016. What changed? What changed was the Steele input by Steele and Comey, Rosenstein, McCabe, the Attorney General's Office, the FBI saying, or not saying, that the information that was made part of the FISA warrant, as you heard in the audio clip from the second audio segment, they never told the FISA court that this was from a political opposition research company. But again, this is a Title I designation. You're going to be hearing more about this week. This is a Title I designation, which is much different than a 702 designation. Okay. All you have to do is remember this. You could be the first one in your group, your book club, your knitting club, whatever. You can be the first one on your block to know. Because, and thanks to Cheryl Atkinson, thanks to Conservative Treehouse for echoing this. Because of the consequences of this type of surveillance, because they're so comprehensive, and because of the severity to the immediate loss of constitutional protection, the privacy and liberty is so stark, the U.S. government, through the FISA court, it makes it very difficult to gain such Title I designated authority over a U.S. citizen. So understand what we're dealing with here. This is not just mere approval of surveillance, which is bad. It's bad. That's bad enough under 702. This is under Title I. And I would urge everyone to really broadcast this. And if you want the, again, Cheryl Atkinson, Conservative Treehouse, there, and I'll put the program description or the link in the program description, but there it is. And exactly what protections are in place for Title I surveillance authority. Look, there are strict rules requiring that each and every fact presented in an FBI request to electronically spy on a U.S. citizen be extremely vetted for accuracy. I mean, we're talking extreme vetting. And presented to the court only if verified. So, this goes from bad to a hell of a lot worse, like right now, when you consider 702 authority versus Title I authority. This goes from bad to holy moly, much worse bad. I cannot even tell you. This is, again, the colonoscopy with a fire hose authority, but knowing the fact that Comey, the FBI and the Department of Justice did this at the behest of a political candidate should send a chill down everyone's spine. And if it doesn't, what's wrong with you? So, the takeaway from today's show. You're not hearing this elsewhere. In the media, the honest media, or elsewhere. The difference between a 702 and a Title I authority is huge, or huge, whatever. But you get the idea. This is really a game changer. This makes it so much worse. And the penalties so much greater. Because presentation of any unverified material under the FISA court to justify a wiretap would certainly violate crucial procedural rules called Woods procedures. Remember that. That you're going to be hearing about that. Woods procedures. Again, thanks to Cheryl Atkinson. Again, Comey signed 3 FISA applications on behalf of the FBI. You heard Maria. He lied. Of course, that was in reference to the Hillary Clinton investigation, but nonetheless. And McCabe signed 1. Sally Yates signed another. And then Acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Bowente and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein each signed 1 application. Remember, you have to build on, and provide probable cause with each signature, with each extension. Excuse me. And remember this. This goes into the time when Donald Trump was both president-elect and the president of the United States. This takes on a whole new level, a whole new meaning. So, Sean Hannity, Title I. Greg Jarrett, Title I. This is huge. Lionel, Title I. Big difference. Title I is a different authority than Section 702. Title I. The takeover, or the attempted takedown of our nation by Obama and by the Clinton cabal, cannot be understated. This is huge. I want to thank you so much for listening to today's broadcast. Look, if you like this show, the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour, please tell others about it. Post it on social networking. Spread the word about this show. It's growing. I can't believe how quickly it's growing. My goodness, thanks to all of you for really pushing it out in the forefront. Of course, this is not meant to replace, just merely complement our flagship show tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, The Hagmann Report, of course, heard on Global Star Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, and Global Star Now video. You want video? Go to HagmannReport.com. God bless.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.